Donkey Kong! What's with all that noise?
Chill out, Cranky. I'm listening to Virtual Theater's new Patreon series, Banana Slamma, which follows my adventures in the animated Donkey Kong Country cartoon show. They're reviewing each episode. It's bodacious!
Virtual what now? What's a Patreon?
Dude, Virtual Theater is a podcast about video game movies and the stories that shape them. And with Patreon, you get tons of extra content and bonus shows for only $1. Whoa! Not only do they show up on Patreon, but they also have shows on every episode of both Captain N and the Zelda cartoon.
Captain N? The Zelda cartoon? I heard those shows were as awful as your cartoon. Honestly, these whippersnappers today don't know how to make a good show anymore. Back in my day, we had real heroes that didn't need a Patreon to sell tickets.
Gotta go, Cranky. Candy's coming over to watch Banana Slamma from Virtual Theater. Catch you on the flip side.
Subscribe now to Virtual Theater's Patreon for only $1 to get Banana Slamma, Zelda, Captain N, bonus shows, early access episodes, and so much more. Virtual Theater, the podcast about video game movies and the stories that shape them, available wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, yo, look out down below.
Hello everyone and welcome to the ZeldaCast here on ZeldaDungeon.net. Andy Spiteri alongside Alice and Aletha. What is going on, Al? How you doing?
I'm pretty good. I just want to plug our Twitch stream really quick. Everybody can come to the Twitch stream and watch Andy like gear up to do that intro every single week. You know, and it's great. It's fantastic. So come watch us on Twitch every Sunday.
My goal, because I'm watching you while I make my silly little face and get ready. My goal is to try and break you.
It usually happens, yeah.
I know, it didn't happen today. I was just like, damn it. Come on, Al. Yeah, we are live, by the way, if you want to watch our beautiful mugs over on Twitch every week. Usually we stream at about noon Mountain Time, although today we're a little bit late because one of the members of this cast showed up a little bit unprepared. I'm not going to say which member that was. But it's probably not Allison. Let's just put it that way. So we are here today to talk. Actually, there's a lot of stuff that we got to talk about today. And I guess the meat and potatoes of our episode is this is going to be our first big. I don't quite want to call it a spoiler cast, but I guess that's an appropriate term, like a spoiler cast. We're going to be going through all of the Dragon Tear cutscenes today. So. Spoiler. If you have not got these Dragon Tear cutscenes, come back and check this out after you're done. I will say though, I do think that the spoiler pushback that we've got has kind of died down a little bit.
Yeah, I think I feel like every week we say what we need to say about it, and I feel, yeah. You know, it was starting to get into everyone's heads like, oh shoot, if I'm not done with this, I'll just come back later, which is fantastic. We want you to come back.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, come and listen to us at your leisure. These episodes, there's no expiry date on them,
forever.
Baby. Yeah. So, really quick, before we get started, I do actually two things before we get started. I want to plug an appearance that I am going to make on another great Zelda podcast. Not another Zelda podcast, but I got to be on the Hello Hyrule podcast this week, and I don't believe that the episode drops for another couple months, actually, but I had a really great time talking. I don't know if I should say what we talked about. I'm not entirely sure, so I won't, but it was a really great time. It was a great show. Hosts are like super smart, super. They made me feel like a Zelda novice, so I'm looking forward to to everybody getting to hear that and, you know, getting to listen to that when it comes out. It's not coming out for a couple months, like I said, so some of the stuff that we talked about might be a little bit old by then, but I had a really good time on the show, and so, yeah, shout out to Pete and Chris, and thanks for having me. All right, let's, before we get to the Dragon Tears, let's talk about that Nintendo Direct that happened this week, which, classic Nintendo. It was like, hey, we've got a Direct coming in, like, 16 hours, by the way, get ready. So I watched this Direct, and I have a few thoughts, but I just wanted to get your opinion and see if your general main takeaway from it was the same as mine, Al.
Feeling that it would be. My first initial feeling, especially when the Direct was announced, because I feel like pre-Tears of the Kingdom, I was glued to Nintendo announcing Directs or announcing anything, really, because I was anticipating all the Tears of the Kingdom news or potential Zelda news. After Tears of the Kingdom, I was like, oh, was a Direct announced? I didn't see it. Like, you know, I wasn't anticipating it. And then when it was announced, I wasn't, like, stressed. Like, how am I going to be able to watch this? Like, because, of course, it was happening at work. I wasn't stressed about what if there's Zelda news. I kind of figured that there may or may not be, but even if there was, it wouldn't be, like, significant or substantial that we would need to do an initial reaction to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just kind of felt like, not that it was underwhelming in any way, but I've been satisfied with my game series, so I wasn't, like, as hyped or having anticipation for it.
I'm almost the same as you, where slightly different, and I was watching it, and I was impressed with the Direct. I thought it was a fine Direct. There wasn't anything that, like, completely blew my socks off, as we'll talk about in a minute. But, like, it was so nice to watch a Direct and not have the cloud of Breath of the Wild 2, Tears of the Kingdom hanging over it. It honestly was so nice. I mean, after 4.5 years of covering the game from the announcement to the release, man, it was like every single Direct in that time, like for 4.5 years, was just like, is Breath of the Wild 2 going to show up? Is Breath of the Wild 2 going to show up? Is Tears of the Kingdom going to show up? This was just like, just such a breath of fresh air to know that, like, we don't have to worry about it. And yeah, I know that we're going to get DLC, and I know that we're going to get that announcement, but it wasn't like hanging over the entire Direct. Like, you know, it instead of, like, they got to show us something good, it was like, maybe they'll show us now, maybe they'll show us later, and that's totally fine. So that was my, like, honestly, biggest takeaway from this Direct, was just how refreshing it was to not have to be worried about this Zelda game all the time.
Yes.
So it was nice. Yeah,
exactly. And then you could also enjoy the announcements that were made without having that feeling in the back of your head, like, oh, maybe they'll end the Direct with Zelda news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was cool. Yeah, I agree. That was really nice. And I just watched it at work. It was very, like, casual and nice.
You know? Yeah, it honestly was. Like, and the second takeaway that I had from the Direct is that you can really tell by the types of games that were announced that, like, the Switch is near the end. It's near the end.
Yeah, I feel that too.
I think when you start seeing, like, a lot of remakes and a lot of other kind of games of that nature, that kind of they're going to be fun. They're going to be great games. But they kind of feel just like, not like placeholder games, but like something that you can just, I don't know, doesn't have the same weight as, like, some of the other heavy hitters. To me, I was like, okay, this is the end. Like, we're getting into the last little bit. Which was totally fine. So, I there was a lot of stuff, that being said, that I thought was really great. Like, I think that, obviously Pikmin 4 is going to be fantastic. I'm going to buy that day one, probably in, well, maybe not, cause we'll be in Chicago when that comes out.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Maybe I will buy it in Chicago and I'll take it back with me. But, Pikmin is one of the most fun game series, that I can think of. So that's going to be great. I love that Pikmin 1 and 2 are on the Switch as well. I thought that the Super Mario RPG, that's my favorite SNES game aside from, like, Super Metroid, so I'm really stoked about that. And what else was there? Oh, the Metal Gear Solid Super Pack coming to Switch kind of got me excited. And I thought that, like, there was a few other things in the Direct that piqued my interest, like the Detective Pikachu game. I'm still not entirely sold on Super Mario Wonder. There's something about 2D Mario for me that's just, I don't know exactly what it is, but it looked a little bit too new Super Mario Bros-ish for me, but I could be proven wrong about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, was there anything else that kind of stuck out to you on the Direct?
Not particularly. I think Pikmin 4 looks like a lot of fun. I've never played a Pikmin game. Maybe that'll be my first. I think Super Mario Wonder looks fine. Like, I think it looks, like, really whimsical and magical and kind of and cute. But I feel like, personally, I can only deal with so many Mario levels before I get bored. And right. So I don't see myself, like, playing, unless I want to play with, like, my siblings or something or friends. Which isn't to say anything bad about Mario games. They're just not my, they're not up my alley. So I thought it was fine. There was a couple, there was, within the first 5 minutes, they showed a farm sim and I was like, uh-oh.
Oh my.
we're gonna have another farm sim direct. And they only had two and I didn't care for the first one, but the second one, Fae Farm looked very cute. So if you're into those, I was surprised they didn't show anything about My Time at Sandrock because that's coming out on the Switch in September. But I guess they don't feel the need to show that. So otherwise, I thought it was fine. And then, of course, we got to the end, which was, you know, like, not what I was expecting for Zelda stuff, but I was excited about it, so.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I was expecting any DLC announcements, actually. I thought that they might maybe in passing just announce, like, Wave 1 is coming at this time.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
But I was expecting like a trailer for the DLC, anything like that. We did get the announcement of two really awesome looking Zelda amiibo. Particularly the Zelda amiibo looked fantastic.
She looked in like gorgeous, beautiful, ethereal. Yeah. Of course, we got Ganondorf. I was really excited to see that we're getting another Ganondorf amiibo because there's only one. So I really like, and his design is so cool. So I'm super excited about that too. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to those. I think it said holiday. So, my guess, like, would you like to do predictions for DLC? Because I have one.
Okay. Shoot. I don't have one, but you go ahead.
As far as announcing, I don't know what the heck's going to be in the DLC. But my guess is this is going to be, like, a repeat of 2017, where Breath of the Wild came out. And then at the Game Awards, Breath of the Wild won Game of the Year, right? Mm-hmm. And then they did the trailer for Champions Ballad. And so I think it's going to be very similar this year.
Yeah, I could see that as well. I mean, everything else from this game is mirrored Breath of the Wild pretty much consistently, so I think that's a pretty good take. I did have, like, one comment about the amiibo, though. And I was like, why did they just release that when the game, like, came out? I don't know.
My guess is because it's connected to the amiibo. Or, I mean, sorry, the DLC. Like, something is going to connect with those two characters, or the amiibo is going to have a functionality that's, so, like, that has something to do with the DLC.
Okay. Well, I really hope that, like, I would love to have a Raru amiibo.
That would be so cool.
And at this point, like, it's too late, because if we get another Link amiibo, I'm going to be sick. But I do wish that instead of, like, the Champion's Cloak or the Champion's Tunic Link amiibo, they would have went with, like, the tunic, or I guess not the tunic, but, like, his little wild clothes that he was wearing.
Oh, yeah. Or the Zone. Oh, my God, I love the Zone armor. I can't wait until we do the episode where we talk about armor in this game, because I have a lot of feelings about it.
I will say, I think that Link is missing that one signature outfit in this this game, though. Because, like, when you think of it, you think of that green and beige kind of outfit that he's wearing. But you can't upgrade it or anything like that. So it's not very useful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But nevertheless, it was a solid Nintendo Direct. Lots of stuff to look forward to. But yeah, you could definitely tell that the Switch is nearing the end. And I mean, it's been 6+ years, so that's... It's about that time. So, okay. Let's talk about these dragon tears. And once again, I just want to say that we are going to be, talking story spoilers here, specifically, obviously, the dragon tears. So if you haven't completed them all or you haven't beaten the game, come back later, check out our thoughts once you're done, and then let us know what you think. But we're going into full spoiler territory here, okay? Like, no holds barred, talking the end of the game, talking a lot of different things. Actually, I don't know how much we'll talk about the end of the game, but we're certainly going to spoil the heck out of the Dragonteer cutscene. So,
yes,
this is it. This is your warning. Okay, good. Okay, so this is a pretty big main quest in the game, and of course you start off with Impa telling you about all the geoglyphs around, and you got to go and find them, and You gotta go and make sense of all these strange markings across the land of Hyrule. And I guess, like, I thought that this was a better way to do the memories than Breath of the Wild had. A little bit more fun, I thought, because it, like, in Breath of the Wild, you just kind of get, like, pictures and whatever, and I don't know. It was okay. And I get why they did that to encourage exploration, but to me, this felt just a little bit more, I don't know, like grandiose, like having these big, like, glyphs that you could see from you know, a decent distance, and mm-hmm. kind of focus you a little bit more on the actual cutscene itself. So I thought, in terms of, like, functionality, this was an improvement over the memories. What did you think?
Yes, 100%. And again, like we've been saying, and like we'll continue saying, this was Nintendo's way of getting away with the same exact thing, but in just different enough that I felt like it was acceptable. So,
yeah.
So, because I remember we were talking about things we wanted, things we probably didn't want in Tears of the Kingdom, and memories kept coming up, and I didn't want memories at all because I thought it felt unique to Breath of the Wild. But they did it again in a way that was unique to Tears of the Kingdom, and I was just like, oh, God. Like, part of me is so annoyed that happened, but part of me is just like, it's different enough, yeah. And it makes sense. It totally makes sense when you get to the end, you know, of how this came to be. And so they made it work, and I'm like, damn it, they're getting away with it.
Like, so, I mean, yeah. There was a valid storyline reason for it, yes. Which I guess is all you can ask for. But it really was like a retread of the memory system, but much better implemented and with an actual reason behind it. So, again, it's kind of one of those things that just makes me think of, like, you know, Tears of the Kingdom being, like, the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate version of Breath of the Wild, which is, like, the N64 Smash or something like that. So, they did it, they got away with it, and it worked, I think. It did work. And it was fun, I thought, hunting down these geoglyphs. A lot more fun than, like, you know, I think in Breath of the Wild, you kind of reach a point where you're just like, I just want the memories. Like, where are they? Go to ZeldaDungeon.net, find out the locations, head over to them. You know, whoop-de-doo. I found them all.
Right.
Whereas this game, you get more of a direct, like, path to the one room in the Forgotten Temple, which shows you all the locations. I will say this. Apparently in that room, I've been to this room, like, multiple times, and I still have not seen this. But apparently in that room, it tells you the order that you should get those.
I think it's well, Catherine and I were talking about this yesterday, but I think it's like the murals that are on the walls.
Yeah.
I forgot. I said I was gonna go look and see, but I guess the murals on the walls are in the order, which is fine. But if you really think about it, nobody's gonna look at that and be like, I'm gonna go find these in these geoglyphs in the right order that they're on the wall. Nobody's gonna do that. Everybody's gonna be like, oh, I see a geoglyph over there. I'm gonna fly over to it or run over to it and get the memory or get the tear. Yeah. You know, so even if they are in order, nobody's going to look at it and think, oh, yeah, I'm going to go find it in that order.
Yeah. I thought that was frustrating in this game.
Unless Impa or her, I can't remember who's with her, but tells you, like, go look for them in this order. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I'm sure that there is, if you look, there probably is something that says, like, get them in this order, and that's fine. But, like, the way that I was doing it, I kind of went over to the Rito and, like, the Hebra section first, and I kind of did that area, and so I picked up any geoglyphs that were in that area, and then I would kind of go over, and as I'm unlocking the towers, and kind of get the geoglyphs in that order, so I wasn't unlocking them in terms of, like, the way that the Forgotten Temple told me to. I was unlocking them in the way that I played the game, so it kind of was a little bit, like, I don't know, it was a little bit frustrating, I guess, to have all of these moments kind of come out of order. Because, like, for the Dragon Tears, like, I feel like there's more of a, like, concise story and order line to them, right? Like, they happen on a timeline. So, whereas Breath of the Wild's memories were just kind of, like, little snippets and character moments that kind of made sense. Like, if you found a memory of Death Mountain, it was about something in that area. Whereas, like, the same is true in Tears of the Kingdom. Like, if you find a geoglyph, it's probably something pertinent to that area, but it's also, like, you know, they are very much in sequence. And
yeah, and it's so, like, more pertinent to what the geoglyph looks like rather than the area, to be honest. Yeah.
So I was frustrated with that because I think my second or third geoglyph that I found was the one where Sonya, you know, gets stuck from behind. And I was like, oh, pfft. Okay, well,
spoiler to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so which I have some thoughts on that, by the way, but...
Yes, I totally agree, where it's just, I'm going to keep saying this, the open world concept is awesome, that you get to go and do whatever you want, but I feel like there is an easy way, because we've seen this in Horizon, you know, that there's an easy way to make the story continuous throughout, where they could put them in an order, or they could say, you got this geoglyph, we need to go get this one that just showed up. You know, that somebody just discovered. There is an easy way to make you do this in linearity. And I know that people get hung up on linearity, but it's not always a bad thing. If it's about story, I think it's a good thing.
I agree. The thing about it is, like, I think what they could have done is, like, you get one and, like, the next one unlocks in the sequence. And then the next one unlocks in the sequence. And I think that would have been cool. And, like... you're completely right. Like, I think that, like, this game and Breath of the Wild 2 is both so, like, it just wants you to be able to do anything you want whenever you want, which is great, but it does detract from the story that you're trying to tell, and I think that really shows up in the Dragon Tears, or at least it did for my playthrough experience, because I was just like, you know, I can't, like, properly get this story in sequence, and it feels like, if the story seems lesser than because I'm hearing it, you know, in non-sequential order. So that was frustrating. And I don't pretend to be, like, some game developer that knows anything about anything. But, like, when you look at this game, you can glue anything together. You can ascend through any ceiling. You can rewind time. Like, surely there is a way where you could have made it, like, even if you did have all of them on the map at the same time, surely there is a way that you could have, like, given the cutscenes and, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, like that kind of order. So that bugged me about this game. I think that while the Dragon Tear concept, like, it was cool and it did tell a better story than Breath of the Wild, but, like, the way that Breath of the Wild told its story was more conducive to, I don't know, I guess, like, the open world or the way that it was trying to tell, which is kind of a good and a bad thing, because, like, Breath of the Wild's story, I don't think, was all that great. But those, at least those memories and those moments were like little snippets that didn't really impact, you know, the way that you understand the story if you got them out of order.
I think it was more like with Breath of the Wild, they were vague enough that they could have taken place at any time, except for those few that you're like, this is clearly the end where Calamity Ganon is rearing his head, you know?
Yeah.
Those were clear, but the rest could have taken place at any point in their journey to help Zelda unlock her ability. whereas the Tears is a very concise, there is a timeline of events, and it's just jarring to get them out of order. And I will say that, actually, when we talk more about them individually, there's a couple where I was like, why did you say that? Now I know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Because, like, there's foreshadowing, but there's also telling you the end result. And even though the end result was still, like, incredible, I could still see it coming a mile away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, we just got a comment that basically says what I was trying to say in a much more clear way. This is from Christy. I like the Dragon's Tear. Let me try that again. I like the Dragon's Tear better overall, but I think the memory makes more sense for an open world. The Tears have a clear narrative, non-ambiguous timeline. And I think that's what I'm trying to say. I do like the story much better. It doesn't necessarily work, like, telling the player in the way that I think they wanted it to. So, which is a little bit too bad, but...
It's the same, I think, with the Spirit Temple, because the Spirit Temple should be done, while the other dungeons don't need to be done in a specific order, because the cutscene, unfortunately, is the same exact cutscene, the Spirit Temple does, and it has such a significant cutscene that... Once again, you are kind of getting a mix of the story here that's not in order. And it, while it's fun to have the freedom, it ruins, I wouldn't say ruins, it, like, tampers down the overall, like, effect of, like, wow, this is an incredible story.
Yeah. I think if I could go to Nintendo HQ, go talk to Eiji Aonuma and say, listen, I've played a lot of your Zelda games, they're awesome, but this is my one thing I want you to keep in mind for the next game. Before security dragged me out, I would say, like, don't be afraid to introduce, like, some kind of, I don't even want to say linearity, but, like, structure to the games. Like, I don't think that anybody is going to complain if you have this massive open world, but, like, you have to do the Rito Temple first, And then you have to do the Goron Temple. And then you have to, like, I don't think that that is, like, so wrong in, like, you know, saying, like, there is an order to these dungeons that you have to do. There is an order to this, to these Dragon Tears that you have to follow. And mm-hmm. and you can go and explore, and if you really want, you can get all 12 Dragon Tears right away at the beginning of the game before you do anything. You can have 3 hearts, but, like, you gotta unlock the first, and then once you do that, it's gonna unlock the second. And once you get the second, mm-hmm. it's gonna unlock the third. And I think that's the way that I would have liked to see it, and I hope that if we return for a third open world game, that's the direction that they go. Because I do... Yeah. You know, it's almost like it's too much of a good thing. Like, by giving you so much freedom, they're taking away from something that I really value in Zelda games, which is the story and the structure and everything like that.
So. Yes, I agree.
Okay, let's talk about the actual Dragon Tears. So there are 12 of them, and some of them are more noteworthy than others, but mm-hmm. I think each of them has at least something going on that's worth talking about. So let's go. Tier number 1, Where Am I? Zelda wakes up in a forgotten time. So she does indeed travel back through time. We were talking about this for, you know, I don't know how long, but yes, she very clearly is going back to time, to basically the time of Hyrule's founding, and meets Sonya and Raru, who conveniently happen to be taking a walk wherever she lands up and find her.
Yeah. I love this scene, because it was obviously the first one that you... I'm pretty sure this is the first one you get, because it's where you find Impa, yeah. and where she kind of activates the quest. I don't know if you can get Tears before then. That would be some testing we'd have to do. But I love this because it confirmed a lot of our theories that we were thinking, that the separation in this game between Link and Zelda was time. So Zelda went back in time, and I love that. And then also we got to get to know, you know, the spirit that we've been traveling with on the Great Sky Island with Link, you know. Mm-hmm. Kind of getting to know Raru. Well, we get to see him in his actual lifetime with Sonya, and how they met Zelda, and how kind they were too to her. Just this random person just popped up, and they were like, "Oh, you're from the future? Cool!" Like, and they took her in, you know. And I thought that was really nice and cool.
I agree. I also want to point out that I think both Sonya and Raru look awesome. Like, their character designs yeah. look awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah.
I would love to have an amiibo of both. Nintendo, you gotta yes. make this happen.
Raru amiibo would be, because he's got like so much going on with all the jewelry and yeah, stuff. And like,
he looks so cool.
And he's so awesome looking.
I think this is love like it. Far and away the best version of Raru, or like any kind of version yeah. of Raru that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think he looks great, and I think Raru in this game is actually like a really great character, and I have some more mm-hmm. thoughts on other characters in here, but. Yeah, this just kind of sets up what we had suspected for a long time. Zelda's going back into the past. She is in a Hyrule that doesn't know the Demon King, or at least not yet. So let's go over to tier number 2, Unfamiliar World. Now, Zelda has a secret stone, which, by the way, every single person, I think, listening to this show, including me and you, imagined that the tiers of this, you know, yeah. of this game were the secret stones. So when mm-hmm. they started calling them secret stones and not tears, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is why we couldn't know the title of the game for, like, forever? Because this is a spoiler? Like, really? Yeah, and I guess it makes more sense, but...
It does make sense when you finish the Dragon Tears, like, the quest line. But yeah, when we were like, well, if it's on the mural, that's going to be the spoiler, not the Tears of the Kingdom title. So
yeah
it was definitely, like... I can see now why it is a spoiler, but at the same time, like, nobody would have guessed.
Nobody, what the heck is going on. Yeah, without context, nobody would have ever known that. So I'm
no.
Yeah, I'm calling shenanigans on that.
Also, secret stones. You couldn't have called them something cooler. Yeah. From the Zonai, like, godlike people up in the sky. You got secret stones. Really? Come on.
I agree.
Secret stones. My God.
So we know that Zelda has a secret stone. And Sonya also has a secret stone. She is the Sage of Time. And so there's a few things that I want to point out with this scene that don't make a ton of sense to me here. So she's basically just like telling Zelda about her powers, stuff like that. And she's like, okay, come back to the castle. You can hang out with us for a little bit. And she says a few things that are strange. And I think you pointed this out. Sonya says that Zelda is her heir, but how? Because
what do you mean,
I mean, how?
Because Rauru and Sonya are king and queen of Hyrule. They're the founders of Hyrule. So they create the lineage of the royal family that Zelda comes from.
Well, let me ask you a question. Did you see any little Rauru's or Sonya's running around?
No, neither
one of them make it out of this.
Like, so if you consider the fact that Calamity Ganon happened 10,000 years prior to the Calamity that we know in Breath of the Wild, these events happened way, way, way before that because it was during the sealing of the Demon King, which Rum talks about in Breath of the Wild very, very briefly. So this is like beyond 10,000 years ago. So evolution... Also, if you look at, like, Sonya's years are still much longer than most Hylians, right? I think evolution just took its toll and produced Hylians from the Zonai and the Hyrulean whatever that Sonya is. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Evolution can happen thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years, so.
But you're missing my point. Like, Rauru and Sonya, as far as we see... do not have anyone to carry out their bloodline, and neither one of them make it out of this Demon King business.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, maybe they were just off running around somewhere. You don't know. They might have had children.
Maybe. I hope, because that's a pretty big plot hole, if not.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't realize what you were saying.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, but, like, I was looking for little Rauru or little Sonya running around, you know, Sonya Jr.
Maybe somebody else had to take over the royal family, and it was more actually Hylians that did it.
Maybe.
Because Rauru and Minoru, the only Zonai that exist in Hyrule, the rest went back up to the sky.
And maybe I'm nitpicking at something that doesn't really matter, doesn't really need to be explained, but it did seem a little bit weird to me that was something that she said. And then, you know, the other thing that kind of bothers me a little bit is she's talking to Zelda, and she's like, you know, you can, I can't remember if it's this one or actually another dragon tier, but she's like, you have the secret stone amplifies your powers, but you still have to control it. And so I'm thinking to myself, yeah. Like, okay, well, like, how the heck did Zelda, like, travel back in time in the first place? And what I was waiting for in the game was actually another classic example of the bootstrap paradox, but we never got it. I was thinking to myself that, like, okay, what's going to be really cool and going to make a lot of sense is that Zelda, because she traveled back in time and she's in the past, she knows that the only way to defeat Ganondorf is to get her into the past, so she's going to master her powers and somehow make that stone kind of take her back into the past in the future. Does that make sense what I'm saying? So, okay, let me try that again.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So my thought was that... So Zelda's in the future, or let's just call it the present, actually. Let's call it the present. So Zelda, the present, falls and is then transported back in time. So because Zelda's back in time, because everything happens with the Demon King and stuff like that, Zelda realizes that the only way to defeat the Demon King is for her to be back in time and repower the Master Sword and turn into a dragon. And so I was waiting for her to say, like, okay, well, like, if that's the only way, then I have to ensure that my future self... that isn't born yet, gets back into time. So, like, creating kind of a bootstrap paradox by creating something to get her future self to come back into time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I kind of get where you're coming from. I think it's more like, you know how she activated her power in a distressful situation, like a distressing situation because Link fell and she was like, no, you're going to hurt him, you're going to hurt me, and Hyrule's fallen and I'm in despair, and then she unlocked her power. Well, I kind of feel like her time power unlocked the same way. Well, she didn't really unlock it yet, but she was holding a secret stone, which amplifies your powers. So it kind of was unlocked by this. She's like, I'm falling. This very scary man just woke up under Hyrule Castle. Link's arm is all super jacked up. And so it kind of like was a distressing situation that she activated her power from. I think you're right.
Like, I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I would have rather, like, her going back in time being part of, like, Zelda's master plan, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah. Not just, like, something that kind of happens by happenstance.
Yeah, but her master plan in the end was incredible, so...
Yes, like, yes, it was.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I jumped the gun a little bit here, I'm sorry. That was tier number 3, Minoru's Council, that Minoru was explaining about the nature of the secret stones and how Zelda has power over time and over light. So she's kind of like a super secret stone user because she has a little bit of Rauru and a little bit of Sonya. And she She also, I believe this is what you were talking about. So Minoru kind of foreshadows, but in a very blunt
obvious
way.
Yeah.
About draconification, which kind of gives me like Harry Potter vibes. What are those things that break up Voldemort's soul?
Oh, the Horcrux.
Yeah. It kind of gave me like the similar kind of vibe as that a little bit. Where she's like, it's very bad. Don't do this. You're going to lose yourself if you do. There's, you know, she's like, well, you could get back to your time by doing this, but you shouldn't do this. So immediately, as to your point, it's just like, okay, that's probably how she's getting back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of those things where it was like, okay, cool. Maybe at the end of this, she'll turn into a dragon and then stuff will happen. But, and of course, when we get there, I feel like it was such a harrowing moment that I didn't care that I already saw it coming. You know, but at the same time, I was just like, I wish you could have like said, we're going to research. There may be something that can make you immortal or something of that nature. And then with us, knowing what we know about the Zelda series, maybe we're thinking, oh, she might become like purified and become like the goddess Hylia incarnate, just like Ganondorf can become demise incarnate, basically, with his secret stone. So I don't know. It would have been nicer if they did something a little bit less obvious so that you didn't have to like you couldn't already guess by tier number three what was going to happen.
I don't know what would have been worse, actually. I was just thinking about this, if like Minoru might have like, I mean, I guess you want to get that, like you want to say that at the beginning just because you almost want to try and make people forget that that's even an option, and maybe that's why they said it so early, because there's a lot of stuff that happens in between. But if you would have said it at the end, maybe we would have had a little bit more ambiguity about how Zelda is actually going to get back. So I'm not sure which one would have I would have preferred. But I think it's pretty clear. Like when I saw this, I was like, someone's turning into a dragon, like for sure.
Yeah. Or maybe if you said like eating a secret stone turns you immortal, right? But without saying the dragon part, because I feel like that is such a like a huge, huge gut-wrenching moment. That it would have been even more of a moment if I didn't know that it was her turning into a dragon.
So I don't know about you, but my immediate first thought when I saw this cutscene, and I when I watched it again today, I was like, okay, who are the three people that ate the three stones?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I feel like this is my DLC prediction. I feel like they're gonna answer that question. I think they're gonna do it. Because I don't know. Like, do you see any of the three dragons in Old Hyrule? I didn't notice them.
I didn't see them in Old Hyrule. So from what I've been like theorizing is that they are. I think they're the three goddesses,
Dedenneru
and Feroe, that ate the because like maybe Goddess Hylia directed them to protect Hyrule, eat the crystals, become dragons, and where was
and,
I going
and specifically
with that?
Sorry, I'm gonna interrupt and just say that I think that this version of like Din, Feror, Nehru, they're gonna be like Zonai. Like I think they're gonna be Zonai characters.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Just be, I don't know, like a different interpretation of them. But if I were to throw out a wild prediction for DLC, I think it's gonna be those three, and I think it's gonna explain how, you know, why there's these three immortal dragons constantly roaming around Hyrule. And I think that would be great DLC, by the way.
Yeah, I think so too, because getting to know I feel like getting to interact with the dragons more was really cool.
Yeah.
I'll definitely talk about Zelda's dragon a little bit later, but like the fact that you can like jump on a dragon now and ride them and like they go down into the depths, they get up higher in the sky. It's just like there's so much more going on with these dragons, which I'm glad that they gave us after Breath of the Wild. But yeah, it's just like that immediate thought where you're like, okay, if you could turn into a dragon like that, what happened to what's going on with the other three? Like, seriously.
Yeah, that was my immediate thought was like, who are the other three? And I think it's fairly clear who they might have been, but those what do these versions of those characters look like? Which I think is really intriguing, and why? So I really hope they go that direction with the DLC. Really.
And why are the goddess statues connected to them too? Because they have specific screens for themselves with the goddesses, and then the mother goddess in the Forgotten Temple would obviously be Hylia's goddess statue. So
yeah.
I'd be curious to see if there's more connected with those too.
Well, hopefully we find that answer out. I think that would be, I think that'd be really cool. Let's go over to tier number 4. This is just more of a, kind of a cool cutscene that doesn't offer a whole lot of story implications, but it's Gerudo Assault, and, Ganondorf is trying to storm Hyrule Castle, and we got a Triforce team up here between Raru, Sonya, and Zelda using all their different powers to smite down Ganondorf's forces. And then Ganondorf devises a plan. He says, well, seems brute force won't be enough. I need to steal that secret stone.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, the seeds of the Demon King are planted.
Yes. It's kind of like, I thought this was one of my first few cutscenes, and I thought it was really cool. Because you get to see the force of nature that Raru, Sonya, and Zelda can be. Especially Zelda. Hers is like, her power emanates even brighter than the other two. So.
Yeah.
I just thought that was super cool. But also, like, you get introduced to Ganondorf this way, and I just wish there was a little bit more that we got to know about Ganondorf. Because otherwise, he just kind of pops out of nowhere, like, from the desert, like, yeah, Hyrule's going to be mine, and I'm going to take it from these people.
And, I agree.
And I just wish we kind of, like, I really like that he's just straight up evil, because I love morally gray characters as much as the next person, but I love that he's straight up evil. I just want to know why he's straight up evil, that's all. Like, what are his ambitions? He just wants to make the world fall apart and be dark all the time? Why?
You know, I'm not concerned so much with that, but I do wish that we just would have got to see a little bit more of Ganondorf. Because, like,
yeah.
you meet him, and it's just like, okay, well, he's already clearly evil. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But, like, maybe show, like, it would have been kind of nice to see, like, maybe some more memories, like, dedicated to Ganondorf and not necessarily mm-hmm. Zelda's uprising. And maybe we'll get that. I don't know, in the DLC as well.
Oh, in the DLC. That would be awesome. I feel like I really didn't get to know him until I was fighting him, and he showed a lot more of his personality and his, like,
how evil bit.
He was. Yeah. And I was like, I feel like this is the only real time that I'm really getting to, like, see Ganondorf's character.
A little bit. Well, there is another... Yeah, there's one more scene, I think, specifically where you get to know Ganon a little bit, but I would have liked a little bit more with him. I agree. Mm-hmm. It felt like he was like, if it wouldn't have been Ganondorf, okay, let's just say if it was like a random different bad guy, I think we'd kind of be dumping on him for being like a pretty thin character that doesn't mm-hmm. have much to him. And obviously that it is Ganondorf helps because he has that lineage and he has that history, but
mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see, and I don't need to see like in depth, like about Ganondorf's childhood or anything like that, but I don't know, maybe like a little something. I thought that
not
that
like in cool. depth, but just a little bit more understanding, because literally he just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like he just comes from the desert and that's it.
Okay. Tier number 5, a show of fealty. And we get, this is probably the Ganondorf cutscene where you get to hear, I would say, most of his dialogue. And this is, like, the fakest Pledge of Allegiance that you've ever seen in your entire life. Ganondorf is swearing fealty to King Raru. Everybody knows that it's BS. King Raru knows it's BS. Ganondorf is barely even trying to hide it. Zelda's just like, what are you doing? And then, you know, it doesn't turn out so well. And Zelda tries to warn Raru, and he says, like, Which I guess isn't, like, completely absurd, his reasoning. Like, you got to keep your enemies mm-hmm. close, and he wants a tighter grip on what Ganondorf is doing. And I guess this would also be when the Gerudo officially become part of the Kingdom of Hyrule, which is probably mm-hmm. a pretty big deal. But yeah, it does seem rather silly for Raru not to literally imprison this guy for what a dark menace he is.
Right. I was super confused when I got this cutscene because I thought it came before the Moldoga attack. Because when I first saw that attack, I thought Raru knew that Ganondorf was behind it. Because you literally can see each other from across the plateau and the edge of the desert. So I was really confused. And then I went back and watched the attack and I realized that Raru, Sonya, and Zelda didn't see him. He saw them, but they didn't see him. And he was pledging his fealty in order to get closer to grabbing one of those secret stones. So it made sense, but at first I was really confused. I was like, why did he just attack them and now he's pledging fealty? So weird. But it also reminded me of Ocarina of Time Ganondorf, how he was trying to get close to the king too to get to the sacred realm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about it in the next scene, or in the next couple scenes. Next tier, we've got Zelda and Sonya. And this is kind of like a little light breather scene, a little bit low-key, rather. Sonya and Zelda are just chatting, and they start talking about Link, and Zelda is so clearly in love with this guy that it's like coming out of her eyes, and not really even trying to hide it, even which is kind of nice to see. A little bit refreshing.
Yeah, yeah, and I love Sonya and Rauru are kind of teasing her, and like, we want to meet him. Like, they're her parents. Like, yeah, let's meet your boyfriend. You know, I thought that was actually a really sweet moment.
There is a moment in this scene where the Ganondorf theme or the Hyrule Castle theme starts to play as Sonya is talking.
Yes. Which, yeah, it's the Hyrule Castle theme. Yeah. The old school Hyrule Castle theme.
Which I want to save for the next tier, because I told you I had a theory that obviously did not end up being true.
Right. Right. I thought when I heard that, by the way, I was just like, I feel like they changed it a little so it matched Sonya rather than like the king, quote unquote, the king of Hyrule, which we usually know is associated with that song. So
this was a nice little scene. I always kind of got the impression watching it again today, I was like, it seems like Sonya like really isn't that concerned with getting Zelda back to her time, and that was like my projection, because I had a theory. I guess let's just go ahead and say it. Let's talk about tier number 7. Sonya has met with treachery. So let's talk about that scene, and then I'll tell you about my theory. So this scene is pretty awesome, but it's also pretty ridiculous, I think. So fake Zelda just shows up, and it's like the most like clearly like fake set. It's a setup, and like anybody can, Mr. Magoo could see this coming, right? Like, this is obviously not Zelda, and Sonya and Zelda go to confront this fake Zelda, and this is where my problems are. Like, one, what is this fake Zelda? Is it just like a puppet of Ganondorf? I don't think it was explained very well in the game at all, in the memories, or in like the actual like main quest where you have to go to Hyrule Castle. I think it would have been cooler if fake Zelda turned out to be a character, which I'll talk about in a second. Because right now, it's just kind of like, well, what are you? Are you just like a projection of Ganondorf? How did Ganondorf make you before getting the Secret Stone? I'm not sure.
So the way I kind of interpreted it is that he saw Zelda in one across the way from the plateau, and also in that room, and he was devising his plot to get Sonya's Secret Stone, right? And so I think it's his phantom that is playing Zelda, because we later are confirmed that the Zelda that's running around Hyrule in the present is Phantom Ganon, or like his projection of Zelda, what he remembers from the past. So well,
no, I mean, I understand how that. I interpreted.
Yeah.
That's how I would interpret it as well. But I guess my problem with that is, like, to my understanding, before Ganondorf gets the Secret Stone, which turns him into the Demon King, I don't think he has that power to make phantoms. Does he?
Oh, I assumed he still had some form of magic, some form of, like,
maybe
power.
This is probably me splitting hairs over something that doesn't really matter.
The Secret Stone doesn't give you power. It amplifies your powers.
Right. Well, yeah, you may be right there, but they don't really ever say that, and I had a problem with that scene for that reason. The second problem I have with the scene, and so what happens immediately after, is the phantom disappears, and Ganondorf appears out of literally nowhere, and Sephiroth's Sonya right in the back, which is a pretty big moment, but I do have some problems with it. One, like, why is everybody? Like, why is it just Zelda and Sonya out here? Like, and two, like, how did, like, I guess maybe Ganondorf does have some magic in the bank, but to my interpretation, he was just, like, a regular powerful warrior that didn't have, like, any of these, like, special magical abilities and needed the Secret Stone to take him to that next level. So I was kind of like, how does this make sense? Like, if it were me, I would have constructed a scene where maybe there was, like, a battle, or maybe Ganondorf summoned, like, a distraction monster or something like that. And I know that I just said he doesn't have that power yet, but I don't know. Let's just go with it. He creates, like, a diversion almost where he's just like, oh, we've got this thing kind of almost like Scar, okay, in The Lion King, where he creates this stampede and he's like, Mufasa, you got to come and rescue Simba. I could have been down if like that happened and Ganondorf was like, you guys, you got to help me, like the Gerudo are being attacked, whatever. And he kind of stabs him in the back there. I think that would have made more sense rather than like, how did Ganondorf like appear in the castle out of nowhere where there's presumably guards, right? Like, I don't know. This is probably just me nitpicking again, but by God, that's what we're here to do, so.
Yeah, I mean, I knew they were alone. That was the point of like what she said at the beginning. But if they knew it was a trap, It seems like they knew the initial trap, but not the, like, extension of the trap where Ganondorf right. was there, where he was anticipating them knowing that it was a trap. So if I were, you know, a smart political royal figure, I would have had backup in that situation.
Right.
And they didn't. So I can kind of understand where you're coming from there.
I feel like it just makes Sonya and Zelda, and to an extent Rauru, look like putzes for, like, the, so you knew it was a trap. Okay, that's fine. But, like, you got outsmarted, like, so quickly. And this yeah. is, and my, here's my third problem, and I'm gonna tie it back to what I was talking about a second ago, is that I think that this would have meant more if Sonya was not a paper-thin character. Like, there's not a lot to her, unfortunately. Like, you have some nice moments where she's talking to Zelda, but, like, you never really get to know her. Like, you never really... There's never really anything to her other than she's the queen, she has powers that she isn't going to help you with. Like, she's supposed to have the power of time, but they can't use it in order to help Zelda at all. So I was like, oh, okay, whatever. So that's my problem with this scene, and this is what I pitched this to you, and I think this would have been cool, okay? But there were a lot of moments in this game. Like, when they were playing the Hyrule Castle theme, when Sonya was talking, when Sonya was kind of like, I think in time you'll learn how to get back. I was like, is Sonya, like, an agent of Ganondorf? Is she, like, in on the fix? Like, is she fake Zelda in the future? And I was like, I'm sure they probably won't do this, but, like, imagine that. That would have been cool. Like, that I think could have been something. And that could have made her a really great character. And maybe she has ambitions of her own and evil ambitions, and I was just like, this could be cool if they go ahead and be bold and do this, but they did not. She's just like, she's the queen of Hyrule, she's good, and she dies, and that's pretty much it. There's nothing really, you know. I think they had an opportunity to make her like a really cool and memorable character, and I don't think she is. I think the design of her is really great. I thought the voice acting was great. I thought, like, the scenes that she was in was great, but It's kind of like eating a Lunchable. It fills you, but there's not a lot there, you know?
I wouldn't say that she's any worse as a character, like, with development, as any of the other characters that we've had in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, just because...
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, here's what I think. First of all, there's more to her when you get all the Zonai reliefs, or whatever they're called, from those flower platforms up in the sky. You get to learn a little bit more about her. Nothing, like, super substantial, but you get to learn about, like, how her and Rauru kind of, like, met and fell in love, and, like, what she is to him, like, how she helps him rule Hyrule, and how they do have their fun moments, and how she really, like, needs to, she takes care of him too, because he'll be off hunting and she'll be like, you need to come back and, like, take care of stuff. And so you do learn that she does have a character. My problem is you have only so many cutscenes, and, like, while this story, the overarching story, is really good, it's the same as in Breath of the Wild, where you kind of got this little tiny glimpse of the champions, but you don't really go in depth to what the champions are, their character development. And that was a complaint we had about Breath of the Wild forever ago, and we wanted more in the DLC, but they didn't necessarily give us any more. They did, but not a lot, you know? I would feel that Sonya is just a victim to that same instance, you know? It's the circumstance of having such limited cutscenes or limited time with so many characters.
You know, like I get what you're saying, and I respect what you're saying. But, like, I feel like I know Rauru a little bit more. I feel like I know Minoru a little bit more. And granted, you get a lot more time with them in this game. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I knew Mipha a little bit more. I knew Sidon a little bit more. I knew Urbosa. Like, I feel like I just, like, had more of a connection and knew those characters just a little bit more. And maybe it's because I got this scene, like, so early on that I knew she was dying. So I was like, okay, well, so much for that character. Why would I bother to get to know her? And you don't really get the opportunity to. So I don't know. That's my critique.
Okay, fair enough.
take it for what you will. I thought that they could have made Sonya into, like, an incredible badass villain, but she's just kind of like I think this is the last thing I'll say about Sonya. Like, she is what I would imagine Zelda would become, like, eventually when she kind of, you know, is the queen. Which, by the way, why is Zelda not the queen?
I asked the same exact question. I said the same thing. It's been like 5 years. Why isn't she queen of Hyrule?
There's no king. There's no queen. There's no prince. There's no competing, like, claim to the throne. What's going on here?
I don't know. I don't know, but I asked the same exact question.
I would just say, just to finish this thought, I will say that, like, so while I think that Sonya is what Zelda would probably become when she becomes queen, and I guess that that's just, like, a little bit boring to me, because it's like, well, I already have a Zelda who's, like, this innate good person. Like, I think I would have liked a little bit more, I don't know, of a different flavor, I guess, with Sonya.
I think that's fair. I think you do. I think there is like a lack of connection. I felt that I connected with her just fine, but at the same level that I did with the champions, with the limited time that we got to get to know them, or the limited cutscenes that really showed their character.
Right.
I wanted to just touch back really quick on the Phantom Ganon being Zelda, because you had your theory that maybe that was Sonya. I had my theories that were pretty out there. But I was like, I kind of wish that one of them were true. At first, I thought it was going to be, like, the witches, or, like, the connection of the witches, Twin Rova, maybe, like, working for Ganondorf. I think
that would have been really awesome.
Cool. Or, you know, Fi is, like, very indirectly in this game. There was a moment when you were chasing Zelda around Hyrule Castle, and then she, like, makes the Hyrule Castle look all new again, and she's walking around, but, like, she's popping up everywhere, like, suddenly disappearing, popping up, and I was like, this is giving me some Ghirahim vibes, like, who is this, you know? I knew that was, like, the most outlandish possibility, yeah. But I feel like anything would have been better than Phantom Ganon, who, like I said, isn't, like, horrible. I love Phantom Ganon, it just, we've already dealt with him in the overworld, that it was kind of disappointing to me.
Well, and I guess the other thing that I would say about the Phantoms is that, like, when you fight Phantom Ganon, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of, like, intelligence there. He just kind of seems like a monster, right? Where whoever is masquerading as Zelda is clearly, like, an intelligent being. So I can see why you were disappointed there. It's worth noting, too, that in this Sonya is met by treachery Dragon Tear, this is the infamous Ganondorf laughing meme, which is great.
Come on, like, I love Ganondorf in this game, but there's, like, two moments where I'm like, he looks like such a dork. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And that is one of those moments. I was like, why'd you gotta make him look... You couldn't make him look evil, like, evil, deranged, and so you just make him look deranged, deranged, you know? Like...
it's awesome, but it is, like, pretty silly. So tier number 8, Birth of a Demon King, picks up directly after this. Ganondorf grabs Sonya's secret stone. Zelda's just standing around doing Lord knows what, but I would have tried to get that stone back maybe immediately. It's a pretty cool scene. It's a pretty cool scene. You see him transform. I think this is as close as we'll ever get to Demise coming back. And like, I kind of at a point where I'm like, okay, clearly like Fee's never coming back. Ghirahim's never coming back. Demise is never coming back. Those guys are in Skyward Sword, and I think that's fine. As long you have like your little homages and callbacks, and you see a lot of them with Fee, with Demise, and probably, like you said, with Ghirahim. This is a very, very cool cutscene. Ganondorf looks awesome.
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe I didn't, when we were theorizing from the trailer that we saw this image of Ganondorf in, my theory was this is kind of like a cloak of power, like he just gains this power where he kind of turns it into a form that looks like Demise. So I felt like I was both right and maybe kind of off, but like, he turns into the Demon King, which just happens to have an image like Demise. It's the closest image to Demise that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
So, you're right. He looks awesome. I love the way his voice is altered, too. Like, how the power changes his voice. It's really creepy. I feel like I can hear Matt more in that than in most of his other, like, dialogue just by himself. Or even when he's a corpse, he doesn't even sound like himself, which makes sense. But, like, I just love how much... It just is a clear picture of Ganondorf at his core. It's just power upon power. You know, he's like, yes, I'm ready to take over the world. And he's like showcasing that power by rising the first blood moon. I thought that was a really cool way of like giving us an origin story of the blood moon. So, yeah, it was a very impressive scene. That's probably one of my favorites of the tiers.
I agree. I think that was a great scene. I think the next one is my least favorite. And that's tier number 9, Sage's Vow. And, Raru is giving all of these sages' secret stones so that they can all team up to fight Ganondorf together. And my thought is, like, who the hell are these guys? Like, why should I give one you-know-what about any of these people? Because, like, who are they? Like, and I don't know, maybe... I don't think that I would have wanted, like, four new characters in the past like this, but, like, I don't know. Maybe I just wouldn't have done it at all. I guess you had to because you need the new sages, but, like, it's kind of an underwhelming, I thought, because, like, again, it's, like, I said Sonya was paper thin. These guys aren't even on paper.
They're what I understand your opinion of Sonya to be, 100%.
Yeah, so, I mean, I get why you had to do it, but it's kind of just like, eh, like, whatever, this is fine. Like, this would probably mean more if we knew anybody in here. Like, Minoru gets a nice moment here. And really, that's about it.
I feel like the Gerudo sage, it does get a little bit more than the others, especially in this cutscene and in, like, her own cutscene where she's talking about the imprisoning war.
Yeah.
Because you hear the Zora sage say... the last free city or town of the Gerudo Desert has fallen, and she has a reaction like, Ganondorf has taken over my people completely, you know, even though he was, like, what, king of the Gerudo or whatever, or the one male that's born to the Gerudo, and you would think that all the Gerudo would follow him, but it's clear that they don't. And so I thought that was substantial, and then also in the in her imprisoning war where she's just like, I hate this guy, like, you can tell how much animosity she has because he's defiling the
reputation of the Gerudo. Yeah,
exactly.
I love that too. I love how these Gerudo, they just hate Ganondorf's ass. Yeah. They hate this guy so much.
Exactly. So I thought there was just a tiny bit more insight into her character and the Gerudo as a whole versus the others, which I like literally know nothing or anything about.
Yeah. So this scene I think is kind of, you know, it's fine. We go over to tier number 10, which is a king's duty. And here we get, you know, I actually thought when I was watching this, I was kind of like, this is like a skippable one. It's not that great. But I think it actually is kind of cool because, like, Zelda's telling Robert, like, listen, the guy in my time that's causing so many problems is the Demon King. You're not going to succeed. And I think it's a cool moment for Raru, who's just like, even so, I have to try because it's my duty. And I thought that what he said, too, was really apt and really cool. Or, like, you know, in your timeline... you never came back here and you never got to influence this battle. So, like, this is, there has to be a reason. And I thought that was like kind of a nice little moment for Raru here. So not like a lot to this, but I thought it was cool.
I agree. Like, yeah, there isn't a lot to it. And I think initially it kind of feels like you could skip it, but I feel like the takeaway line is there's a reason you came back here. There's a reason that you came to our time. And I think that's the start, the very beginning of Zelda's master plan. That's where, like, the idea was put in, well, maybe not the idea, but, like, the seed was planted in her brain because she knows that they're not going to win. And then that's where she starts to realize, I'm here for a reason, and it's only something I can do, which she says later.
Yeah. The other key takeaway line here is, like, I think clearly Raru knows that, like, he's not coming back from this. So he says, like, listen, Link is the last line of defense, which, again, I think plants that seed in, where it's like, Zelda's like, okay, if Raru is willing to sacrifice himself, I need to think of something that I can do to sacrifice myself too in order to power up Link in the future to defeat this guy. That's what Raru does, essentially. He powers up Link. Zelda will power up Link. So they kind of know that, like, they're ultimately doomed, but they're gonna do it anyways. They're gonna buy them time. It's almost like when Aragorn storms the Black Gate at the end of Return of the King.
Where I was thinking of how in Horizon, where they all know where they're... Well, I don't want to spoil Horizon, but...
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Story point. Yeah.
But I thought that was great, too. So I think you're right. You could definitely see the gears starting to turn in Zelda's brain. And I think she's just like, I think I know what we have to do. Mm-hmm. So let's move on. So the imprisoning war happens after this. So I think we can almost, like, combine the last two here. Because they're almost like... back-to-back, are they not?
The last two tiers?
Last two tiers, yeah.
Yeah, almost back-to-back, yes.
So let's just combine them, because I feel like there's no sense talking about one and not the other. So tier 11, A Master Sword in Time, and tier 10, Tears of the Dragon. So this is Zelda's plan fulfilled, where you start off, we're at the Temple of Time. Is the Temple of Time in the sky at this point?
No, it's still down on the ground. Yeah, it's still down on the plateau.
Okay. So Zelda gets the Master Sword. It's traveled back through time, and it's all mangled, and it's all messed up, and the only thing that can repower it and make it even stronger than what it once was is to absorb light energy. Thousands and thousands of years of light energy, and there's only one way to do this, and Zelda has her plan. She has flashbacks to Minoru talking about draconification, about the initial battle with the corpse Ganondorf, one thing I love about this is when the Master Sword comes, you can hear like the little faint Fee's Farewell playing. Mm-hmm. Oh.
And yeah, and her talking too. Like she talks to Zelda, and I think that's also just like, I love that.
This was so good. Just hearing that theme, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, is great. It's great. Yeah. And I also think it's cool because once again, it's activated by Zelda's power, that time, the Master Sword time traveling. But it's not from her own control. Like, it's clear that she could bring stuff back from time. She just can't figure out how to go forward in time. But, like, her tear activates when Link, I guess, activates her on the Great Sky Islands. And that's how the Master Sword gets back. So I love hearing, like, the recall feature, too, on the Master Sword. So that was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, it was a great scene. And I think she gets that sword and it seals the deal. And she's like, this is the only way. And so, well, yes, they kind of gave away what was going to happen earlier in the game. It's still pretty cool to actually see it take place.
Yes. Yeah.
Zelda swallows her, which by the way, is really an awkward scene when they eat the stones. I think both Ganondorf and Zelda is super awkward eating those things, which also, by the way, those stones are like pretty big. Like,
they're a little hefty.
Like, I don't think you can chew them.
No, I take some like supplements, and some of them are like pretty big. So I was just imagining it,
Yeah, well, she's got a good gag reflex, I guess. That's neither here nor there. And so she transforms into the Light Dragon with the Master Sword on her back, and thus her plan is taken into action. She is going to roam the skies for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. She's going to lose herself, lose everything that she is. It's a great sacrifice, to be honest. And it's a great scene, and it has a purpose behind it. She's powering up the Master Sword. This was like a gajillion times better than whatever the hell Zelda was doing in Breath of the Wild. I still don't know what she was doing for 100 years. Like, doing something to Calamity Ganon, and she was in stasis? I don't know.
She was just holding him back in, like, this weird, creepy egg sack.
I thought that was like so lame, but this, I was like, this is fantastic. And I think it really adds value when you're playing the game. Cause once you're just like the Light Dragon and Zelda, I gotta rest. Yeah. Like it's a constant reminder of her.
Okay. I want to talk about that because first of all, this cutscene is so like, just, it like really like hurt my heart because I knew it was coming, but the way they did it, the music, the build up, you could see like her eyes like at first like flutter, like she's like starting to lose herself, and then she's strong enough to grab the Master Sword in time before she just completely shatters into light and turns into a dragon. And the music's incredible. She shoots up into the sky, and we get the dragon's tears. The tears fall from her own eyes and spread off across Hyrule. And that would have been the spoiler of the game, but heck, we wouldn't have guessed that in a million years. Once I knew that Zelda was the dragon, every time I saw her in the sky, I would go visit her and I would go tell her about like what I'm doing. Like, hey, this is the progress I've been making. I just wanted to keep her up to date on like how we were going to defeat Ganondorf. And so I would just like go and sit on her head and just like visit with her and be like, okay, I'm going to go do my job. And I would like fly off. But every time I saw, like, because like, I was just like, she's up there. She's watching. She's with me on this journey. And even going to see her was like really like upsetting too, because you could see her eyes, but she was like there, but she wasn't there, you know, so like not present. And like, yes, we knew that she was going to become a dragon, but actually seeing it happen and actually going to visit her, it's just like, holy crap, this is so like, it really got to me.
It was a great scene. It was a it just, I thought it was a great story device. It was a great way. Like, listen, I know that we all wanted Zelda to have a more active role and maybe even be a playable character. But I think if you weren't going to do that and you were going to create some kind of reason for her not to be active or present in the story, this is probably the best way you could have done it. Because, like, I think, like, who didn't love the dragons from Breath of the Wild? Seeing them play a bigger part in this story, I thought was awesome. And that it was Zelda was great. The cutscene was great. And the emotional weight behind it, I think, was great. Like, it's Zelda being selfless and sacrificing, you know, everything to just ensure that evil is eventually defeated. And we could talk about the ending on another day. I would have done a few things differently, but I thought the ending was also great. But I think that the Dragonteer, I mean, the whole Dragonteer quest is basically to show how Zelda got back, a little bit of the history behind the Imprisoning War, and then what Zelda is doing and how she's setting Link up for success in the future. And to that end, I know that we complained about the way that the story is told, but I think the story itself is actually fantastic.
It is. Yeah, it's incredible. I really like that even though we didn't get to play with Zelda as a playable character, there's still a lot that you can do to have her feel involved. And
particularly the last battle too.
Exactly. And like, you know, using some of her pieces too as fuse weapons, I'd done a lot. And so I felt like I had her in battle. And then just the teamwork that they have even across like eons of time was also fantastic. I'm going to say something and I know you're going to disagree, but I would argue, I know we already talked about this, but I would argue that I was somewhat right about Zelda and like the sad Zelda's lullaby.
No.
She sacrifices herself to become a dragon. I mean, come on. You're like, she basically died.
Nope.
In order. Come on, Andy.
No, what you said, I quote, was Zelda falls into that chasm at the beginning of the game and she's dead. And she's dead.
Something happens to her and she dies, but she doesn't die.
Oh, she doesn't die at all. At the end of the game, she's...
That's different. You don't know that until you get there. But, like, you see her sacrifice. Minoru told her it's forbidden. You're going to lose yourself. You give yourself up. You sacrifice your own self to become an immortal dragon.
I'm calling shenanigans on that right now.
I'm not going to say I'm 100% right, but I'll say I was, like, 70% right.
70%? I'm calling the police. Are you kidding me? 70%? Oh, my God. Come on.
I feel like this is a fun debate, so I'd be curious to see what other people think, too.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. I think that the Dragonteer storyline is great. And really, this is, like, I guess the main storyline that runs through Tears of the Kingdom. I will say, because we're not done talking, we'll talk about the overall story again at a later date. I do wish that there was a little bit more of an active plot going forward as well, not just, like, memories again, but... That's neither here nor there. We'll save that for later. I guess any final thoughts about the Dragon Tears before we get on out of here?
I just want to reiterate that I think the story is fantastic, but two things can be true at once. The story is great, but the implementation and how you get the story was really kind of flawed. So, yep. And I feel like that kind of puts a damper on it, just a tiny bit.
I agree. I agree with that. And I do have a bunch of those other like little nitpicks. Specifically with Sonya, I don't know what it is, but she didn't quite do it for me, and maybe it's because I had expectations, or like, not even expectations, but an idea in my head that I thought would be really cool, didn't really pan out, so maybe I'm kind of unfairly, you know, taking that out on this character, but, I thought that, I appreciated that it wasn't, like, random little visits to these characters, like in Breath of the Wild, but as you correctly point out, I think that it hurt because it was such a sequential story and getting them all in these like different orders and stuff like that. I hope that they can fix that going forward. Should there be another open world Zelda game?
Yes.
So, all right. Well, there it is. We want to know what you guys think of the Dragon Tear subplot. Let us know. Let us know if you think Allison's right or not with her Zelda did die business. I know she's not, but I want you guys to back me up here. Let us know over on Twitter at Spateri316, at Allison Aletha, at the Zelda Cast. Come hang out with us in Discord. We are always talking Zelda there. We are going to get out of here. Although, you know what? I did promise a cool announcement, and I said it was going to come this week, but it's going to be its own podcast episode. It's going to be like a little bonus that's coming sometime this week. So you only have to hold on for a little bit longer. a little bit longer, and you'll get the announcement. So there we go. We are, like I said, we're going to get out of here, but we want you to check us out wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, recommend us to that Zelda fan in your life. Tell them where they can get their weekly Zelda fix. Check out Zelda Dungeons, Tears of the Kingdom, interactive map. This thing is the best in the business, so make sure that you go and check it out. We are going to get out of here, but until next week, everybody, take care.